Welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and, incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com 5 days a week. And I swear that this week, being organised by my very good friend Gwillem, has been somewhat fabulous indeed, because he's taken the liberty of organising every single guest that we've had so far this week. And they've all been rather fabulous. And I think he saved the most fabulous to last. So we have Daniel Nunes and Randy Powell. So, Daniel, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And would you just quickly tell us just sort of a little bit about what you do and quickly plug your website?
For sure. Well, my wife and I, Erica Nunez, and, you know, we started up this small business called One Stop Energies. It's onestopenergies.com, IES. And basically, we work with Vortex Technologies. We design and implement new technologies around Vortex Energy. And more specifically, we took inspiration from Randy Powell, Marco Rodin, and a number of people working with Vortex Energy, and we just basically developed new working solutions for our energy problems.
Okie dokie. And what exactly is Vortex Energy?
Well, Vortex Energy, well, pretty much what we work with is copper coils right now, and we have a specifically designed frame that creates a vortex out of copper. And what you end up getting is more energy on the output end from the coil. You get a number of different anomalies like low voltage ozone production. You can start up plasma using one-to-one coils and a number of different anomalies, all using these vortex coils. And they create monopoles, so one magnetic pole versus having two poles, like normal magnets have a north and a south. What we see is a south pole only. So the list goes on with the anomalies there, but basically what we've done is we've created an easy way for people to replicate these coils and, you know, basically fine-tuned how to excite these coils in order to get the process going.
Okay, and you're not exciting them using pornographic websites, are you?
No, not at all. More like sound frequencies.
Okay. All right, because this is a family show. But, and also, Randy Powell, welcome to the show. Would you just tell us a little bit about yourself and quickly plug your website?
Yeah. Well, I'm mostly known for the work I've done with Vortex Space Mathematics, which, you know, is a mathematics project that has started you know, become an inspiration for people like Daniel and many others who are out there in the YouTube world and outside of the YouTube world, who are creating and inventing technologies based on these ideas and finding ways through their own techniques and skills of implementing these mathematical ideas into things that we can start to use to change our technological landscape and hopefully bring it into more harmony with nature. As far as my website right now, I don't have a direct website because that's all in the process of being redone. The website that is, you can easiest find me through is randysdonutsmovie.com. randysdonutsmovie.com, and also just find me on Facebook, Randy Powell, and you'll see the Vortex Mass symbol there, and that's where I kind of post updates on what's going on, and people can get in touch with me.
Right on. So, we've got two Vortex experts here today, then. So the topic's going to be, I guess, pretty specific. Now, we figured out what a vortex is. So you've got a coil of some kind, and you're shooting energy through it, and then as the energy comes onto the outsides of the coils, you're actually able to suck more off it than you're winding up putting in, right?
That's correct.
Okay. That's pretty straightforward. Has this technology been used before to any great effect?
You want to take that, Daniel?
Yeah, I'm not too certain if it's been used before in the way that we've been implementing it. I know Marco Rodin has had some success with antennas based on these other designs that have been developed in the past. But I'm not too certain that there are too many people working on these types of technologies. You know, otherwise, I think a lot of the problems that we face today would already be rectified. So,
yeah, well, we had a discussion yesterday, and Tesla came up, and he sort of wanted to, you know, change the world in a positive way and get these great devices out there that would, you know,
that's right,
make humanity free. And my argument was that he was being naive, that people would see somebody trying to do something good for humanity and encourage it and allow it to happen, as opposed mm-hmm. to people who would see somebody doing so and wish to maintain control of humanity and so shut him down.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Now, in the development of Vortex technology, is there any incidences where somebody's come up with something and then been shut down?
Ooh, actually, I haven't experienced anything like that. I've experienced nothing but positive people who want to help further the technology in whatever way that they can, either through spreading the word or, you know, purchasing coils or donating. So, I mean, I haven't really experienced that. We've been pretty much posting all of our findings to the World Wide Web, you know, for the world to see. There have been replications in pretty much every country at this point. And, I think maybe that's just how the times were in the past, and now people are actually ready to start implementing new things and finding new ways to create the change.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's the difference. It's also that Tesla didn't really have the internet and the amount of communication that's going on now. And because we're not heading up any formal corporation or anything where we're actually, there's nothing to really go after right now except a bunch of individuals trying to implement their ideas and improve upon current technologies that we have. And that's the whole idea of a grassroots energy or technology transformation revolution, is that, you know, you're turning the information over to the people. And once the information is understood and refined enough, I don't think it will be hard for the individuals to liberate themselves. And, you know, it's sort of just like, freedom can never be handed down to you from somewhere else other than from yourself. So we have to refine things until they're efficient enough that we can actually achieve, you know, technology and energy independence in ways that are much simpler than the ways that we're using now. In much the same way we're promoting vortex-based mathematics as a way to make mathematics comprehensible. You know, I was even talking to a mathematician recently, and I was trying to ask him to explain some certain things and equations, and he told me, is that if you're trying to understand this, you'll never be able to understand it because it's too hard. Nobody understands it. You just have to memorize the formulas and get through it. You might understand certain aspects and parts, and that's really what we're dealing with. We have uses for our mass, and we make great contrivances based on them, but at the same time, nobody really understands it. And so I think with this information age that we're in, people are trying to be able to gain an understanding on their own that they can implement on their own in a way. And that's where what we're doing is a little different and harder to just put a stop to it by going after somebody, because it doesn't just live with one person anymore. It's with many, many people who are in the community.
Well, is there? I'd like to see this happen, where a growing community of aware people actually come together and collaborate using their different areas of research, different skills, different technical aspects, in order to create something together that benefits everybody. Is that really happening, or is it still like it has been for so many years, where it's individuals in their own sheds creating their own devices and things like that, and maybe having a few little effects or a few friendships here or there?
You want to comment on that first, Daniel?
For sure. Well, I think for the most part, there are a lot of people working on things individually, and like you just said, Vinny, and you're in their sheds and working on their own. But the beauty is, like Randy was saying before, is that we have the World Wide Web. So I kind of feel like it is coming together, and you do have more people contributing in whatever way, shape, or form that they can, by giving out these findings to multiple individuals and allowing them to elaborate on those findings. So, you know, in terms of creating an actual sustainable city or something like that, where you have everybody just come together in one space, that's not quite where we're at yet. But I think that in the near future, that would be a possibility for sure.
Mm-hmm. And what have you managed to run off of this this Vortex device of yours thus far? Have you managed to run a car on it, or?
Well, thus far we're running low voltage. We're putting in, let's say, 12 volts and getting out hundreds of volts. You know, so you know, we're basically proving out that 1-to-1 coils at this point are able to attain some type of energy gains, whether they be measured as nonlinear or what have you. You know, so the whole premise is that when you have two wires that are equal in proportion to each other and you feed energy through these wires, there shouldn't be any voltage spikes in the range of a couple of hundred volts. So we're pretty much finalized on that. So we've been able to run hundreds of LEDs, different types of lighting units, and charge batteries with these coils. So, you know, right now what we're working on is getting to the next stage of development. So we've partnered with Native Clean Energy, and they've been helping us to basically finalize finished products to license to particular manufacturers, you know, to get the technology actually implemented. So that's pretty much where we're at right now. We would like to see the coils charging batteries for electric vehicles, basically to serve as range extension. You know, so the whole concept is when you run some lighting units through the coil, you only draw a few milliamps of power. So let's say 100 milliamps, whereas a normal inverter would run you somewhere around 500 milliamps, anywhere to an amp. So you get a savings directly there.
Okay. You know, I feel as though I don't know what questions to ask. You know, so if you feel like explaining something more or anything of that nature, go right ahead.
Well, I feel inclined to let people know. I a lot of people are in the same boat where they don't really quite grasp what the energy is or what the technology is. Really, coils are in everything. Coils run your phone, they run your computers, they run your lights, they run everything. And basically, if you design a better coil that can perform its task or its function better, then you have a device that saves you energy. And that's pretty much where we're at. You can use these coils for pulse therapy. They create very large magnetic fields, actually extraordinarily large, anywhere in the range of 20 feet. Or, you know, even 25 feet, you have really large fields. So that means that you could have a coil functioning as a pulse therapy unit for a room full of people, whereas the normal technology today is only one particular part of your body. So that's one application. We've also found that...
What exactly is pulse therapy?
Pulse therapy, well, pulsed electromagnetic fields. What that is it sends a magnetic field through your body, basically pulsing it, and it rehabilitates your muscles. It rehabilitates bone fusing, or even to treat depression. They have a pulse electromagnetic therapy for pretty much everything. So that's an emerging field right now that's gaining recognition, where people can actually have a device in their home and treat themselves for particular ailments.
Doesn't the human body itself produce a magnetic field of some kind?
Definitely. It's been stated that the human heart creates a magnetic field 20 feet in diameter. So it's pretty interesting. And it's also toroidal in shape. So I don't think that's a coincidence. Well, Randy could speak more.
With the pulse therapy, too, you know, a lot of people don't realize out there that, you know, electromagnetic therapies of various kinds have existed in the quote-unquote New Age world for a while, but there's actually really good academic literature now coming out about some of these low-voltage electromagnetic therapies and how they can accelerate healing processes. And this is really good laboratory research that's going on showing that these effects do have merit. I also have a friend who's worked in the development of machines using, they were actually working with soldiers who had very extreme cases of PTSD coming back from combat. And a lot of what that is when your body is conditioned to have this high adrenaline surges over and over and over, it conditions your brain to, is that the break?
In about 30 seconds, you can continue, you can finish your point if you really quick.
It conditions brain to keep reacting in that way, so they were using the magnetic therapy to actually change the structure of the brain so that they wouldn't continue to have these feelings and these surges of emotion, and they found they had great success with it.
All right, we'll be right back after the break. Daniel Nunes and Randy Power are my guests.
I stand alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide, conspiratorial, gangster, computer god communism with wall-to-wall, deadly gangster protection, lifelong sworn conspirators, murder incorporated organized crime, the police and judges, the deadly sneak parroting puppets, gangsters using all the gangster deadly Frankenstein controls, these hangman rope sneak deadly gangsters, the judges
welcome
and the
back.
Police, trick, trap, rob, rick, butcher.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guests today are Randy Powell and Daniel Nunes. Daniel is trying to get his new Skype account kind of running so we can get him on video for those of you listening on the live streams on air. It doesn't matter, of course.
All right. Well, while you guys are doing that, maybe I can help just briefly by trying to explain for some of your listeners who aren't familiar with my project or the Vortex-based mathematics project and Marco Rodin, who was the founder of that. I'll try to give a little bit of an introduction. There's also a lot of videos.
Before you do, Daniel, would you be able to turn down your speakers because we're getting a little bit of feedback from you at the moment.
Okay, no worries.
Sorry, go ahead, Randy.
Sure. So Marco Rodin was the founder of this project. He founded it, what must have been about 40 years ago. And when he made a discovery as a teenager, based on certain mathematical decryptions he was doing, and he came up with this funny equation based on nine numbers, and he started to realize that it had profound implications, even in the simple implications that it had about the value and nature of what numbers truly are. And so after 23 years of working on that, in concert with many engineers and scientists, it was developed into the idea that these numbers, what they were actually modeling was a coil. And so the original idea that what this math is all about has anything to do with coils was actually not from us. It was from an engineer who looked at the numbers and realized that there were correlations there. So from there began this whole journey of people developing coils. Originally, there was a coil called the Rodin coil, which was a bifilar, that means two-wired coil that was wrapped in a star shape with many winds around a surface of a donut. Years later, when I came along, what I did and contributed to the project was I actually was able to solve for Marco's equation in 3D and actually visualize, and this was before we had 3D models of it, but to be able to visualize and calculate in the mathematics what the actual geometry that these numbers were modeling was, and that was a donut or a toroid. Hence, the film that we're working on is provisionally titled Randy's Donuts, as a parody off the famous donut place in L.A. that was featured in Iron Man and different films. But once I discovered how these numbers were actually working, I found that it was creating a different design than what was being implemented in the rodent coil. And so that's why originally I put up the YouTube videos that I have up now, which are probably, you know, around 4 years ago, I put those up. And there's been tremendous advancements and progress on the work since then. And now we're finally getting some of that documented and illustrated and animated. And we're going to be having a lot of that revealed in these films that we're doing. And also, people like Daniel, in particular, have come along and helped to implement that new mathematics as well into some of these coils and working devices. And lo and behold, it seemed that the results improved there, so that the concept was still holding. And the last thing I wanted to say briefly on this topic is to try and explain what a donut, what a torus is, and why it's important. Because we found that even numbers, even every calculation that you can ever do, is in a geometric shape of a torus or a donut. And why it's significant is because, for one, we observe it all over nature. Your blood cells are in the shape of a torus. Your DNA takes the shape of a torus. Your whole body is a form of a torus. The Earth's magnetic field, it said our aura is in the shape of a torus. All the galaxies that we observe are generally toroidal in nature. And I believe that the whole universe itself is a torus. And essentially what that is, it is the true model of a 3D. It's based on an axis. It means even in space, even in the universe, there is always an up, down, left, and right. There is always a preferred frame of reference or an axis. And anything that's accelerated to its maximum speed will form a vortex around that axis, which is why tornadoes and hurricanes and all these different things, vortex systems, have such incredible destructive power. And cosmologically speaking, a black hole is an example of this. And that's what we believe our math was the first that was ever able to model through over the event horizon of a black hole and penetrate into that hole and see what was inside. And what was revealed was this hidden pathway of energy, or dark energy, if you want to call it that. And specifically what I connected to, and what Daniel's work really illustrates well, is the power of sound. That sound is really the fundamental force and source of 3D matter and creation. And
especially guitar music.
Absolutely. Is that the break again?
No.
No. Okay. That was you. Okay. So I believe that inside, when you go into a black hole, they say the matter is crushed so dense that even light can't escape it. The escape velocity of light is not fast enough to overcome the incredible gravity. So even light, which is supposed to be the fastest thing traveling in the universe, doesn't escape. But I always say that sound has the opposite property of light, and that the denser and denser the matter that you pass it through, the faster that it moves, because everything's packed tighter and closer. And I've been going around asking physicists this for a long time, and no one's ever really had an answer on it, so I've yet to hear something back coherent about this in terms of what their view is on this. But I believe when the matter is crushed that dense that even the light cannot escape it, which is what they call a black hole, that sound penetrating that matter actually transcends the speed of light. And just like you see in cymatics, where you vibrate a medium and it forms specific, generally hexagonally based geometric shapes, that is essentially the underpinning geometry that is governing frames of reference for angular momentum or motion through space. And so these coils are one example of trying to find a way to move energy, to move mass and matter along the path of least resistance to get the maximum acceleration, compression, and energy potential, and to use that hole in the center of the donut like a nozzle. It's like a jet, and it regulates the temperature. It concentrates the heat to the center and then pulses it back out using the magnetic fields to cool it over the surface topology so it doesn't overheat. And there's many examples of tortoises having these capabilities and powers in science. These coils are just one nascent field of branching into this topic, but there are many, many, many ways that the tortoise can be harnessed, not just through electrical coils. It could be water or air or really any continuous medium. And Daniel's just now begun some work with some plasma devices, and that's definitely where we're interested in going at the next stage.
I was thinking about making a joke there about trying to get into the tourist, you know, with a tourist visa of some description. And also I was wondering as well that there's a talk about dark matter and all of these other types of matter that they don't think, well, basically previously weren't thought to exist. And apparently during this new Hadron Collider that they had, they found this new, what they alleged to be, it might be a God particle. And as far as I know, in science, might be is just a fancy word for I don't freaking know. and I coined it, I called it that it was doesn't matter.
So that was the old Popeye thing, you know, was I ain't no physicist, but I know what matters.
Yeah.
The thing is, first of all, you have to distinguish between dark matter and dark energy, because a lot of people confuse the two, and they're not the same thing. This energy, the dark energy thing, is supposed to be what's behind the acceleration and expansion of the universe. I believe that we're observing the universe expanding because we're on the southern half of the universe, and the southern half of the universe is expanding and warping eventually to a maximum point where it will then start contracting. And so from the northern top view, the universe is actually contracting. And the beginning and the end is on the same place, which is at the center of the cyclone, or the eye of the hurricane, and that is the basis for how matter moves. But when matter gets compressed to such an extreme degree, the energy, the dark energy, if you will, the invisible energy, is literally wrung out of it, like squeezing the juice out of an orange. And I believe that what distinguishes and allows us to observe this energy, and what we found about it mathematically that is unique about it, is that it's linear. It doesn't bend. It moves in a straight line from the center of mass outward in all directions, and it causes the warping and curvature of all matter, which is relativity, things being involved in a spin continuum, a relativistic spin continuum. And there was supposedly that Einstein said, if you look far enough into the universe, you'll see the back of your head. Because it's all a convergence, if you will. And so essentially we found the way to use numbers to model those interacting systems. One is linear and one is a coil. The physical material world is always a coil, which is essentially a conductor. It is an antenna. Our bodies, I believe, are antennas. And our consciousness is that field. It's that linearity. And so the math gave us a way to start modeling these systems, and now we've started to broach the subject of technology and how to alter technology with this new understanding, and we are definitely getting results. And I think there's many, many more to be found in the future.
And has this kind of been looked at through the fictional eyeglass of movies or something like that? Because you mentioned Iron Man there before, and when you were talking about the donuts and the electric coils and all of that kind of stuff, I thought what sprung to mind was actually Iron Man's little core thing in his chest that's his energy supply.
Yeah, well, that's the whole Randy's Donut joke thing. I think it actually started with the 2012 movie that the Randy's Donut sign comes rolling across the L.A. freeway, and all these people were saying to me that it was a sign, you know. I just was kind of, you know, thought it was funny. And then when Iron Man came out, I started getting all these emails, and I hadn't seen the film, and people were like, oh, man, you got to see Iron Man. He's working on that flux capacitor thing. It's just like that device that you guys are doing, which is originally called the flux thruster atom pulsar. So he's, you know, Iron Man's got this flux capacitor coil thing, and it's malfunctioning on him. And so he's trying to figure out what happens. And he goes and sits in the Randy's Donut sign. And they're like, definitely a sign, you know, with the Iron Man thing. So I don't really, I don't know what it is, but, you know.
See, for Randy, that's what you call a what the flux?
Yeah, what the flux, yeah.
Hey, Daniel, you're back, are you?
I'm here. I was actually working on getting that video up and running, but I don't think it's going to happen, unfortunately. Hopefully next time around we'll get on video.
Well, we have nearly an hour and a half as well before the show ends today. So, you know, there's a number of breaks that hopefully we might be able to work out something in the meantime. But for now, do you have anything to add to this conversation?
Well, I think Randy pretty much said it perfectly there. And, I think for the most part, it's pretty much on point. We have a lot of progress that's being made with these coils and different things that we found to be true. And, you know, one of the direct applications is also plant growth, of course. We were growing some wheatgrass, and we had the wheatgrass sitting right next to the coil, shining a light above the wheatgrass, and found that it grew in a linear slope. So the wheatgrass that was closest to the coil grew faster. So we found that to be pretty interesting.
A friend of mine was doing robotics, and they had a LED light panel and a rotating splint. And they had all the inside the splint, there was, you know, soil and water and stuff like that, and the plants growing out of it. And as it rotated, the plants tended to grow towards the light, so they managed to get a 700% faster growth rate out of it.
For sure.
I'm not sure if that's a similar principle to what you're talking about in terms of the coil.
Well, the magnetic field that's created, you know, if you're able to rehabilitate cells of the body with these type of magnetic fields, imagine what it could do to plant growth. So for sure.
All right, cannabis growers out there, you have been warned. We'll be right back after the break. The VinnieEastwoodShow.com, Daniel Nunes and Randy Powell, OneStopEnergies.com and Randy's Donuts Movie.com. Back in a minute.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream, just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TV eye brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted. A fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president, it seems. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go, in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back.
Amen.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I'm a really big fan of Bill Hicks, eh? And I was just thinking about him this morning in one of his sketches. It's really difficult because you can't actually play a whole lot of sketches of Bill Hicks on FCC-regulated radio because they're so full of bad words. I managed to find that one at least. Anyway, back to my very special guest. You know, I like to have a laugh, guys. You might have noticed because, you know... I don't know how much talk radio you listen to along the in the conspiracy or alternative field, but they don't seem to be having an awful lot of fun most of the time. It's generally pretty freaking sinister and dark and serious.
Sells better in that field. That's one of the good things about our project that I really love. And Marco's certainly always a riot in various ways. But, you know, the sort of liberality and freedom that we've had with the whole thing in terms of intellectual property, in terms of everything, of just sort of letting it go and creating this free-for-all, yeah, there's an enormous amount of high hilarity inside of it. And the truth is, it's everywhere. It's in everybody's project. It's at the Large Hadron Collider, too. But, you know, people don't see it because they take themselves so seriously. And it's very, you know, humor is much too subtle for the serious, you know.
Yeah.
That's right.
I was just thinking, you know, is that why I'm not that popular at this stage? You know, maybe if I was trying to sell fear pornography the entire time and telling people they should be really deathly afraid of the New World Order chipping their kids and vaccinating them in their eye sockets and things of that nature, maybe I'd sell that a lot more.
Mm. We should mix it with comedy.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy.
Don't worry, like, after tonight your show is going to blow up.
All right.
That's right.
Figuratively, I mean.
Is it going to blow up or implode? You know, I don't know. Some kind of a black hole full of doesn't matter would be nice. I don't know. I'm sorry. Kind of losing my train of thought here. It's the end of the week and it's been a long week. And speaking of which, how much work are you really putting in here? Because I've noticed whenever anybody's trying to create something, sometimes they forget to eat and forget to sleep because they're so intensely focused on it.
That's right. Amen. Well, that's pretty much where we're at.
What were you saying, Daniel?
Oh, I was saying that's pretty much where we're at. We pretty much break night over here, Erica and I, you know, just working on these coils. And you know, it's also it's a good thing, though, at times, because you realize that your body's not so dependent on eating all the time, and you develop a different respect for a lot. So I think ingraining ourselves into the work the way that we have over the past 3 years, it's really changed a lot in terms of the way we perceive the world, the way we perceive connections with others, and more the deeper understanding of life in general, and how energy never dies. It's just transferred from one form to the next. Like Randy was saying before, with the concept of the universe expanding and contracting, it's the same thing with our energy. And, you know, life is cyclical, so we like to think of it like that. So, you find a lot of late evenings and early mornings, and it's all beautiful stuff because at the end of the day, it's, you know, we started out on the basement floor of a Bronx apartment and, you know, just no knowledge of electrical engineering at all, no contracting knowledge, nothing, and basically just started putting things together with little... Actually, where we started was levitating magnets. We were looking at these repulsion of magnets and trying different number algorithms for the magnets and seeing if we can sustain rotation faster. And I guess things just got pretty heavy after that. We put some scissors into the first Roden coil design that we replicated for the classic Roden coil and powered it with the 120. The scissors flew across the room, and they were permanently magnetized with a south monopole. So that was pretty interesting. And then we were just like, okay, well, It's got to be easier for people to replicate, though, because if everyone has to go to the store and buy a kid's toy and basically just put a bunch of pins on it, it's kind of hard for a lot of people to do that. So that's where we started trying to figure out how to create a framework that could make it happen a lot easier. You know, so all of this happened. I mean, we were just literally ingrained into the work and. All in just a matter of time, really. And then we look back at it now and realize that it's only been a few years and a lot has been done.
That's what happens when you're doing something every day is you look back over a period of time and you go, man, we've actually done quite a bit, and you don't notice because you're just doing it every day.
That's right. But you realize when the kids are older and they're running around and we're blessed to have a 14-year-old and a 3-year-old. So, you know, I remember we were first getting into this when my 3-year-old was just born. And now he's already 3, running around. It's like a little wizard. And, you know, it's just like, wow, the time really does fly, but, you know, all for good purpose. You know, at the end of the day, our inspiration came in from watching a lot of free energy stuff, Nikola Tesla's work. Looking at all these videos, we were researching Coral Castle, the SEG generator, you know, a bunch of different things, all these different avenues that were all talking about the same thing, just sustainable earth and green development. And then you realize that the only solutions that were out there were wind turbines, solar panels, and the such, and all these things that were so expensive and, really required something to be there all the time in order for them to function. So, our drive was to create something that was less expensive, for one, and a lot more available to more people. You know, we wanted to get off the grid, and we were looking at the price for some solar arrays, and we were like $20,000, you know, for an average family in a Bronx apartment. I mean, not really. It's not really going to happen that way. But, to be able to say, well, you know, here's a solution for people to take these works and just replicate them or figure out that there is something there and that we've already put out majority of the work, you know, and now it's just a matter of building. That's where we're really thankful to be in the position to be able to share with people and say, well, you know what, like a lot of the work has been done and now we just have to start building. So it's a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. So we're really thankful for that.
See, this green revolution has got me thinking. I don't think that they're doing it for the good of the environment. I think they're doing it for the good of somebody else's pockets. You know what I'm saying? So that one group of scumbaggery individuals will have control over all the energy and all the power and over everybody's lives and stuff like that. And, you know, I think to myself, at what point has there ever been a presidential speech regarding climate change where they've talked about the actual really nice, easy technology that everybody can do by themselves, it's incredibly cheap or whatever? It's nothing like that. It's just about taxing all human life and centralizing all the control of energy generation to a few major mega death corporations that are selling inefficient technology like wind turbines and freaking solar panels.
That create a whole lot of waste
when they need to be taken out at the end of their life and everything. It's just ridiculous.
Amen. And now we're at a different stage where we can say, okay, well, we've already proved out low voltage plasma production. I mean, we were just joking about the Iron Man and his little chest centerpiece. You know, he had the plasma arc reactor. And that's essentially what these technologies are going to turn into, you know, where they're able to excite plasma at low voltage. And plasma creates electricity. So, you know, that's just another step in developing this this stuff to a larger scale. But it's all really inexpensive when you think of it. It's just using copper, you know, some different strands of copper, and you can gauge how much voltage you want based on how many times you're making a progression in through the center of the vortex, if that makes any sense. You know, you have if you have 6 conductors and you go in through the vortex 6 times, you can get X amount of voltage. You double that by putting 12. So it's just introducing new concepts to the average people so that they can say, okay, well, that makes a lot of sense, and now we can start building on those concepts in a bigger way.
Yeah. I remember reading an article back in the day, bro. I think in the United Kingdom, they were having problems with people who were stealing copper, right, you know, from all over the place, from junkyards or even from people's homes and stuff like that, or through abandoned houses, and they're ripping the copper out of the walls and stuff like that. And I've written this in the Telegraph, and they said, hey, oh my God, people are stealing copper and they're selling it for cash. Let's ban mm-hmm. cash.
Wow. You melt it down and build a couple of coils with that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're going to love it. You're going to love the justification. We'll be right back after the break. The PennyEastwoodShow.com. Randy Powell from RandysDonutsMovie.com. We'll be talking about cops and their assassination with donuts. And also OneStopEnergies.com with Daniel Nunes. Back in a second. Virus, alert the masses. Alright, welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Now, hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Finney Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, and this wonderful island-chained nation in the Fukushima irradiated South Pacific. And everybody got a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb to help the economy. My very special guests are still with us, Randy Powell and Daniel Nunes. Their websites are Randy's Donuts Movie, coming this fall to a cinema near you, and OneStopEnergies.com for Daniel Nunes. Now, we were making jokes about cops and donuts and stuff like that over the break and what have you, and apparently Daniel, he didn't do donuts no more. He didn't even do a Dunkin' Donuts coffee no more.
No, he'd gone vegan. Dunkin' Donuts. Gone vegan. Well, yeah, that's part of the sustainable earth. We believe cruelty-free is the way to go. I mean, you look at these images. Well, a lot of people don't want to look at them. They don't want to watch the videos for Food Matters and things like that, where they actually show what's going on with these animals. But, yeah, we watched them, and, you know, it was a life-changing couple of videos that we were informing ourselves on. So we decided to go cruelty-free and just live off of fruits, vegetables, and it's really not that bad. People think that being vegan is like something like it's horrible, and no, actually you can season your food up pretty nicely and you really won't miss it if you're eating right. So I believe Randy's also vegan or vegetarian, Randy?
I am most of the time. Yeah, I haven't been 100% pure, but I've been definitely involved. I mean, 95% of my diet is vegan. Mm-hmm. You know, I eat a little fish here and there, but really, yeah, I mean, I've been involved in the vegan thing for a long time. My wife and I founded a organic raw food restaurant here in Charlotte, North Carolina, which is still going, and she's more taking the reins of that now. But it's called Luna's Living Kitchen. People can see that on the web at lunaslivingkitchen.com. And we do all kinds of organic, you know, juices, and working with the local community and local farmers, and trying to do the whole thing sustainable. And, you know, the next step is then trying to implement cleaner and cleaner technologies, because it's amazing. I mean, even doing the most conscientious, absolute, and believe me, you try and run a restaurant in particular with integrity, and you find out really quick what real integrity means and how hard it is. And I'm very proud of what we've done and being able to maintain that. It took a lot of years of suffering and eating dirt to do it, but we have been able to maintain it and make it successful. But it'll really make you think about what's going on out there in the restaurants and different things. But even running the most conscientious, sustainable, organization possible, doing every single thing from all the different kinds of recycling and composting and local farmers and less of any kind of products or packaging or anything. Even then, it's amazing how unsustainable our whole lifestyle is right now on the planet, and how much trash we're producing and how much everything. And you know, that's again, probably the most conscious place in, you know, it's a tiny little business. And, you know, so when you think about what's really going out there and all the cities and how much waste we're producing, it's really crucial. And that, you know, it's something that I've been focusing on a lot recently with people, is that, you know, our endeavors with the coil and all this is one thing, and it's part of the implications of these discoveries that we've started to break ground on and which need to be further explored and worked on in and of themselves. But like an engineer friend of mine said, we know that the phi ratio is real. We know that these spirals exist in nature. It's established. It's there. We observe it. Now, someone may invent, a musical speaker or horn or something based on the phi ratio. And he said, you know what? It may or may not improve the sound. And that doesn't mean that the phi ratio doesn't exist. And it just means that we haven't fully figured out how to tap into it or what it means or what its implications are. So it's important that in all these different topics, we keep a really open mind. But regardless of whether or not my solutions are the answer, or Marco's or Daniel's or any of us, we've all got a piece of it. But regardless of whether or not it is the answer, the point is, and the point that I'm trying to really get across in this movie, is that this conversation is the only conversation to be had. Every other conversation is frivolous. And all technology is frivolous, except the technology which is seeking to liberate us into personal energy independence. That is true liberation, but it does mean radical changes for even the whole condition of the nation state in the world today, period.
I was just thinking about this. We said earlier in the interview that everything in the universe is cyclical. And what it reminded me of is the fact that we currently have a paradigm of cyclical consumption. And that cyclical consumption is an artificially created thing because of planned obsolescence. If we built things frickin' last, a whole bunch of these really massive scumbaggery corporations would simply be built up, and then everybody would have their products, and then they'd have to disappear or invent something new that people can use. Right. Whereas at the moment, you just build things to break down, and that ensures that you keep in business, selling the same old crap every frickin' day to idiots who don't have a choice.
Yeah, I mean, and even, you know, I mean, all these companies now, like Apple products and all that, everything's got a different adapter and different plan. They make a lot of money off all these accessories, and that's the world of business, which is why, you know, we're trying to subvert that by doing things openly, even though it's a slower and more difficult process in some ways. But I think it is true. But the essence of technology, I mean, what you have in a phone now used to be, you know, buildings full of computers didn't contain that. And, you know, the whole basement of MIT didn't contain even a fraction of what's on your phone now. And the essence of that is it's a convergence of applications. You know, one device is now your music, you know, your clock, your telephone, your camera, everything, you know. And that's just one example of what's going on in the computer world. But the truth is, this idea which Vortex Math is presenting in the form of a mathematical construct, an idea of a torus and a proposed solution, but the essence of the concept is the necessary conversation, which is an idea that converges all technologies in one. So it becomes your transportation. It is your shelter. It is a mobile shelter. It is your computer. It is your sound system. It is your navigation system, your GPS. It is its own energy source. It does produce your food, you know, and people are doing, you know, approaching these ideas with things like the airships and stuff. They're not necessarily like moving, but different sustainable housing things that are going on where you can grow your own food and do all that. But essentially, if technology is not going to go away, I think as Marco has said, it's a gauntlet and we have to run it and hopefully come out good on the other side. But there's no choice but to try and run it. So we have to, not just with what I'm doing, but everybody, this is about generating the conversation that we have to search for the essence of the ultimate technology. We have to figure out how it works, because the game of technology and of human population growth and of everything that we're doing, ultimately, it has to be transcending the planet, transcending the biosphere, having limitless abilities with travel, just like we are finding with information and communication. And so, you know, this idea is the idea that everybody needs to be working on, whether they're doing it through vortex-based mathematics or through other discoveries that they make, which may or may not converge. It doesn't really matter. The only axiom that matters is you can't argue with success. So if you've got it and you can make it work and you can be coherent with the idea and ultimately turn it into something, then this is valuable for the cause. And that's what this is all about.
I was also thinking about another idea, which was, mobile settlements. So I had this idea of a moving skyscraper. So you had like massive caterpillar tracks or something like that underneath the foundations, where if it was necessary, you could move an entire tall building very, very slowly, of course, but you could actually migrate massive populations like that without the need for new settlements and constructions and things like that. Simply, like if you've ever heard of the movie Howl's Moving Castle, for example, because yeah. I think what's really happening here in human society is that we approach into these areas because they've got good harbors or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. And there's all these things that change, you know, like water might run out or the sea level might rise or things like that. And it occurs to me that becoming sort of hyper-technologically advanced nomads would really be quite an interesting area of research and development to get into in terms of sustaining human population size and also being able to move to different areas where resources have not been depleted, while resources in the locations where we previously lived allowed to replenish, as it were.
Definitely.
Yeah,
it's like crowding around a dirty water hole.
Yeah, I mean, if you have that that type of travel capabilities, what people are witnessing with a lot of the UFO phenomena, be they our own inventions or something from elsewhere, whatever it is, it's a secret to us. But the evidence is overwhelming that it is there, and Daniel's seen it, and I've seen it. And, you know, it's very incontrovertible once you experience it, and it transformed your whole idea of what technology is capable of. And that's what really turned me on to the ideas of this math, and the fact that there was a coherent math behind it, is that, ultimately what we're talking about is what they call a reactionless drive, which means it's unaffected by the weight that it carries. It creates its own gravity. So you very much could move any amount, any size of anything using this device at its ultimate engineered application, where it becomes its own internal, its own closed system, if you will, its own universe.
Definitely. It's not too far-fetched either, because when you think about things like the Hutchinson effect, which is, simply you have a copper coil sitting atop of an aluminum sheet, and you put enough voltage into that copper coil, it floats on top of the aluminum. It's the Hutchinson effect. So if they can do that, or they have things like electrostatic flyers that are basically aluminum triangles excited at high voltage, and they find that they lift off the ground, you know, they have these technologies already working. So you know, it's just a matter of integrating things that already work. Or how about the SEG generator from Professor John Searle? You know, that's another interesting device that has the potential of lifting up off the ground. So it's pretty amazing stuff that's all real. And as Randy said, yeah, part of our inspiration coming into all this was seeing orbs. We saw a number of orbs in the sky, and Erica and I, we started calling them our friends and looking at them and trying to figure out how those things would be possible. And one of the most recent ones that we saw was over in Oregon. We took a trip out there, and we saw five orbs, fiery balls in the sky, just come into the atmosphere and one by one shoot back out from wherever they came from. And it was pretty amazing that, like, literally just, let's say, 1,000 feet up. And yeah, it's definitely something that makes you question the reality that we experience today and our own limitations that we set for ourselves, you know, and think about new possibilities.
Well, and this is another thing, because thinking about new possibilities requires a form of creativity, right? And I'm of the opinion that currently, when you talk about industry or technological development, a lot of the people who own these massive companies, research labs, things like that, they don't have an overabundance of creativity. They have a competitive mindset rather than a creative mindset. And it's not competition as in, I'm going to make something better than yours and we're going to compete against each other and you'll have to create something better and then I'll create something better. And meanwhile, everybody benefits per stage of these people competing. That's not what they think about. What they think about is, how can I sabotage this other person who's trying to create stuff that's better than mine to prevent him from doing anything so that I don't have to do anything either?
Yeah,
I mean, it's the best way to keep everything slowed down and poor quality. I mean, you know, a perfect example, if you look at, martial arts, it used to be this very extreme private thing held secret within families and secret societies, and you had to suffer years and do crazy feats just to get somebody to show you how to do some punch or something, you know, and that goes on for thousands and thousands of years. And then finally they get a good fighting competition and all the fighters suck. And then, you know, all these fighters start opening up and all the martial arts get shared and people start inventing and improving upon it. Then you have something go like the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or things like that now, where it's evolved so much. And, you know, the game evolves so much because of the opening of the information and the sharing and the growth of it. Which was eventually very, you know, which was originally very controversial to take it even outside of small groups and the family. It was their guarded secret. But ultimately, when we get rid of the paranoia and we let go of our secrets, yes, somebody may become more advanced. People, eventually, it's always been my hope that people will take this math far into the advance of what I've been able to do with it. And I'm only going to get there by teaching, you know, and by sharing that, not by trying to keep it to my own privatized secret. It just holds everybody back. I mean, if Newton had privatized calculus, you know, I mean, where would we be? You know, if he never taught anybody, never shared it, kept it a secret, instead of advancing the civilization as he did. You know, now some people always argue, and I might be one of them, that if you don't, somebody else is going to figure it out and share it. So it will, the information will be liberated eventually, but, you know, we're just taking the approach of being the ones to start that paradigm and to help sharing it.
Well, I just say if somebody else ain't doing it already, then you realize that you have the responsibility now. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show, the show that's all about energetic organized crime and various other forms of scumbaggery as well, where we try to keep the power grid real, real low so no mofo can ever really challenge it.
And welcome back to my very special guests.
What have we got here? We've got Randy Powell and Daniel Nunes. And I don't know what it is about the name Randy, which I find really amusing, and the fact that he's got like this awesome sort of Sherlock Holmes villain mustache just makes it even that more awesome. All right. Well, anyway.
Well, you know, there was another famous Randy. I think that was Randy Pan, the Goat Boy. Being that you're a Bill Hicks fan, you know, there's always Randy Pan, the Goat Boy.
Yeah, and the Macho Man, Randy Savage.
No, obviously the greatest wrestler who ever lived.
Of course. And we were talking over the break about how when you come up with original ideas, I've noticed that what people do is they tell other people what these ideas are. And in the process of telling other people what these ideas are, the motivation for actually implementing that idea themselves diminishes. So the more people you tell about your idea, the less work you actually do on it, and your idea eventually disappears into nothingness. You ever notice that?
That's an interesting insight for sure. I guess I'm really screwed then, because I've told a lot of people. But yeah, you can definitely burn yourself out with the talk. And I that's the problem, is finally now I'm getting to this place where we're going to do a movie and do this and that. And I'm almost really burned out on explaining this stuff, because I've done it so much and said the same things and been over the same topic so many times that you can get in that frame where you just want to move on and do something else. And it's not really that I want to move on. I just want to evolve in the work. You don't want to be a black belt at something and still teaching the basic move to the white belts forever. You know, eventually you want somebody else to be able to do that, so that you can explore more your art and try and improve it. And I have a lot of work in the math and the geometry of this that that needs to be explored. And at this point, it's so complex. Even though it's based on very simple principles, visually it becomes so complex that it requires 3D computer modeling. So we have great artists working with us now. I just put up a new video up on Facebook that's on YouTube as well, done by my good friend Tom Barnett, who worked with me even years ago exploring these concepts. And he did a lot of the animations that were in the TED Talk that I did. And, he's doing fantastic animation work. Our good friend Chuck is doing a lot of incredible web work, and he's built a whole interactive vortex-based mathematics website, which I forget the name of right off of my mind, but I will send you that link. But it's a place where people can actually go in and move these toruses around and look at them from different angles. But it's still, again, a very nascent thing that needs to be, because the more complex side of the math requires a lot of work, and it's all volunteer at this point. And I'm trying to, because I chose not to go the business route with the energy stuff, I'm trying to do that in the entertainment realm and create books and films and share the information, both documentary style sharing of the information, and also developing fictional film concepts that can help explain these ideas and teach people about them through entertaining stories and different things like that. So all of that is in the works to try and also help fund the exploration of further aspects of the math and the technology as well.
Well, see, this is the interesting part about it, is that you can either do two things. You can either explain to people what you're doing, or you can do things that are unexplainable to most people. I don't know if people quite understand this yet. Ultimately, you don't need people to understand what you're doing. You actually need to just do what you're doing.
I agree. Right. I agree. The truth is, this is a lot of both. It is constantly explaining the unexplainable And it is its own kind of Ouroboros and its own contradiction. But I think, you know, you just have to live with that contradiction, and you have to keep, that's why we do everything backwards. You know, science is looking for an explanation for everything. I don't believe that there is an explanation for everything. In fact, I don't even believe that the universe was ever created. If that isn't bizarre enough, I believe that it is eternal, and that the past and future are both infinite and as incomprehensible as that is to us. But it's a bounded infinity, you know. It's a spinning closed system. What was the point I was going to make there? I don't know. I lost it. But I don't know. I was saying something right before that, and that statement just threw my mind off in the other direction. But anyway, we're just trying to find a way to apply these things and get these ideas implemented. I know there was some grand point I had there, but it just the brain clogged.
It happens.
Oh, we were talking about trying to explain the unexplainable. What I was saying was that essentially you have to approach things from the sense that it is a mystery. And so the explanations are just little gifts that the mystery allows us to get, which are almost just like little facets on a crystal, little perspectives and ways of looking at the unity which is there. So everyone's perspective has some merit, but they all fit in a different place. And certainly there are mixes of right and wrong and what everybody is saying, because it is a perspective on the whole, but it is just one perspective. And, you know, so it's always a contradiction, but we try to approach things from the mystery and look at numbers themselves as a mystery and then try to decrypt the answers out of that mystery. So the whole explanation is always elusive, and you could talk forever and never exhaust it. And yet, you know, that's ultimately what we want, something, an inexhaustible well of information that can constantly be derived, because no embodied being, I don't think, can comprehend it all at once.
It seems to be a split in it, like whether or not you're wanting to find the answers or whether or not you're trying to better simply understanding the questions.
Observer's law?
Yeah.
It's like the double slit experiment.
In a way, you know.
The double slit experiment, you say, Daniel? What was that?
Yeah. It's like the double slit, right, where the observer looks at the experiment and the outcome changes. So it's like the roots of alchemy, or the roots of all science, rather, right? You have the scientist, or the person who's trying to learn about these natural laws has to be in tune enough to separate themselves from the experiment, just enough to actually find something. Because otherwise, the more you're seeking for it, the more you're looking at it in a very close way, it's just not going to happen. So it's an interesting phenomenon there.
Well, it's true as well. And I found just in my personal life doing this radio show and things like that, occasionally I'll be burnt out and my brain will just turn to crap and I don't know what the hell's going on and that kind of thing. And if I take a week or two off, and I mean off, like not answering emails or Skype messages or looking at Facebook or doing anything to do with my work, when I come back, suddenly my brain's back as well. It's firing on all cylinders, even greater than it was before. It's an interesting phenomenon that is, like, if you take a step back from your intense involvement, your involvement becomes more intense.
That's right. Well, that's touching back on what you were talking about before, also with you know, looking at bringing out new ideas or new discoveries, and the more you talk about it, the more it gets worn out. Well, you know, a lot of people, you know, they don't realize that, you know, energy researchers are also people. So, you know, you'll get a lot of people asking questions about these things. And when they see you doing some mundane activity, like in the supermarket or something, it's just like, whoa, you're here at the supermarket. But, you know, it's like, you know, you also have to be in line with the finer things of life, which is just enjoying life and having time, let's say, for your kids or for your family, for, you know, yourself. And, you know, it's very important to regroup that element to it, because when you don't, then you suffer the getting tired of talking about the same thing all the time, because that's just part of it. You have to recharge that battery.
Yeah, and other people get tired of what you're talking about too. It's like, what was it? If you love your work, it burdens the people that you love, whereas mm-hmm. if you hate your work, it burdens you.
That's right. That's right. It's very interesting. But we're all human, and we're all connected in ways that are yet to be understood, and that's a beautiful thing. One thing that crossed my mind when we were talking about that whole energy concept of this ever-expanding energy. So just on a for instance, to relate it back to the technology, you know, you have, let's say, a set output of 300 volts. You know, you can plug in 300 volts worth of LEDs into these coils and light those LEDs. Now, what would normally happen if you exceed that, you wouldn't get any light. But instead, what the coils do, they expand how much their voltage output is as you plug in more lights to the output. So what you get is a higher voltage as you plug in more things. You also have a field that the coils create that actually expands. So instead of you having a magnetic field that's, let's say, 15 feet, it expands to 20. As you plug in more lights, it expands to 25. So these are some interesting things that also tie into pretty much what you guys were saying with this ever-expansive energy. You know, and what ends up happening right now on, you know, you have a coil that will pretty much start spewing out ozone. You get a lot of ozone production, and they destroy themselves if they're not designed for that particular purpose. So that's an interesting characteristic where we can actually start, you know, sanitizing rooms so we can create clean rooms. We could structure water. We could purify, you know, a lot of toxins that are in the air. Or let's say doctor's offices, or, you know, schools, things like that. So, you know, a lot of potentials, you know, right here, right now, and using these concepts that, you know, are present everywhere.
Well, I found that the world is full of things that you can use if only you had the presence of mind to use them. And what I find very strange about the energy industry is that they operate under old ideas, old concepts, and I don't ever seem to see new research, new developments coming out of the major energy conglomerates or anything like that. It seems like they're not interested in creating energy in any new way, shape, or form. They're just not interested.
That's why it's up to us. I mean, you know, if other people aren't very interested because they've, you know, they've had their years worth of work, and, you know, a lot of people, you know, they've had a set number of years. I mean, a lot of people took 12 years of schooling to come to the level where they're at now, where they can finally start engaging back in life as, you know, just normal people. And they don't really want to burden the workload and get back into a lot of new discoveries, you know. So that's something that has to be understood as well when we talk about how people want to shut things down or, you know, sabotage other new developments. It's really that, you know, what we end up doing by opening up the doors with new development is, you know, increasing work, which is something that I also feel that we need right now. You know, a lot of people are without jobs, without things to do, and just happens to be that a lot of these coils are going to have to be hand wound. So, you know, it's a beautiful thing when you think of it. You know, you have very elaborate technologies that are using very simple, inexpensive materials, but they do need working hands. So, you know, it's something that could help out the economy in ways that a lot of people are just still unaware of.
Well, I also think that the concept of working, we've gone from the agrarian culture where people were working, you know, usually very close to home on fields or things of that nature, just in order to survive, right? Then we went into urbanization culture where people would travel to specific areas like big cities and things like that, and they would work in factories all clustered together, and they'd be able to produce income that's even greater than just what it takes to sustain themselves. And this is what created the middle class. I think there's going to be a new energy and urbanization sort of revolution here, whereby people, the idea of work to me is really redundant in a lot of ways, because we've got the ability to create technologies that make working almost pointless. You know, it would be cool if we had automatic food, automatic energy, and then what the hell else do you really need to work for if you've got unlimited food and unlimited energy? The answer is
not a lot.
The answer is not a lot. And what kind of new challenges would that provide for society, where everybody says you're not you and you're not worthy unless you've got a slave job? We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
To fly to New Zealand by plane from New York City, it takes 22 hours. So from the Twin Cities, 19. I mean, I fly all the time, and 6 hours on a plane is like a lot, and 19 is wrong. And they distract you. They feed you, and then they feed you some more, and then they feed you. Give me a dessert. I'll do a dessert, you prick. Give me that dessert. I'll have a Bloody Mary. Yeah, give me a whiskey sour. Yeah, give me whatever you got. Just more liquor. And then when you're done, there's still 16 hours to go. You want to know what it's like? You can experience going to New Zealand. It's very simple. Sit in a chair for 19 hours. And take your hands and press your head as hard as you can. And don't stop. Don't stop! 19 hours, just like this. And then at the end of 19 hours, you pull your hands off and you feel like you're in New Zealand.
Welcome back.
You certainly won't feel like you're home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand. And incidentally, that's a great clip to be saying. It's Lewis Black talking about how long it takes to get to New Zealand, you know, like 19 hours on a plane. And we were talking over the break about teleportation. And really, if that technology could be implemented, you know, like a Grand Central Teleport, or, you know, your doormat is a teleportation device, or something of that nature, you know, it would eliminate so many of these interesting problems that we have, you know. I was just thinking about this the other day, guys, is that I spend like 10 hours a day doing this work and what have you, whereas previously, if I had a slave job, I would be migrating in some way, shape or form for about 2 hours a day and working for eight. So the fact that I don't even have to move means I put the same amount of work in anyway. And I think that if we were capable of making transportation instantaneous, transport problems gone, shipping industry gone, airlines and any associated risks and everything like that gone, the problem with your food and stuff like that not being grown locally gone, all of these massive problems that we've really had to deal with for the most part in the 20th century just disappear. Right? Mm-hmm. Quite literally, they get dematerialized and zapped away like somebody in a frickin' Star Trek convention. It would be really, really cool. And as we were talking about, if we can imagine it, then it surely must be possible. I don't think it's possible for human beings to imagine things that simply cannot exist. If they don't exist right now, then surely if you can imagine it, you can do it.
That's right. Well, we have to realize that we operate on a lot of assumptions, too, about possibilities that aren't necessarily founded on observation or could ever be founded on observation, and so we just make certain assumptions. I think a really important one is that, we talk all the time about the laws of nature and the laws of physics and the laws of the cosmos. You know, the funny thing is, when you look at every science except for physics, all these sciences are evolutionary. And yet, then when you get to physics, you have these eternal laws. which is, I mean, who's, no one's observed that. I mean, that's, you know, people criticize me for saying that energy is eternal. And I say, well, you guys use the word eternal all the time. You talk about these eternal laws of physics and this and that, these set laws of nature. And yet that's never been proven. When you look at the way that we behave, we tend to have two different types of behavior, one of which we favor and the other of which is much more prevalent. The prevalent thing that we have is habits, habitual behavior. We do the same things over and over. Like we were saying before, you say the same things over and over again. It's just like, you know, Jude Law in that I Heart Huckabee's movie, you know, where he's always telling the same story. We're in a kind of Groundhog Day of repetition, and we hate it. We recognize about ourselves. We hate when we become cliche. We hate it when other people are cliche. And everybody values something original, somebody who's unique, somebody who does it differently, somebody who's walking a different way. And those people are always the people that influence culture and move it ahead eventually, even if they destroy themselves in the process, which is often the case. It's the same thing with physics. We're talking about laws, but what we may be observing are simply, just like in evolution, you know, habitual behaviors of nature that are awaiting innovation. And so even the work that that we've done so far and the work that Daniel has done, regardless of whether or not it is at 100% implementation stage on the largest levels, what it has done is shown fairly conclusively that certain of our assumptions about so-called laws of electricity are not entirely valid. So, you know, as proof of concept, what Daniel is doing is gold. I mean, because it is showing that whether it's out of my work or something else that he's doing, he's tapped into and is tapping into something that is currently unknown. And so even though our models may all be provisional as we search for perfection, and they may be constantly refined as we search for perfection and we clear away inconsistencies from them, I think that it doesn't really matter as long as the work you were doing, as you were saying, the actual thing that you do has shown that something that we thought was law is in fact not necessarily the case. And that's, those are the beginnings of real innovation, I think.
Mm-hmm. And also I've got the idea, the word revolution gets thrown around a lot. Have you noticed that? To the point where saying that we're going to have a revolution or an energy revolution or something in itself becomes a cliche, like a cliche Guevara or something like that. I had this concept that revolution is simply to go in a circle. And as you were talking about life and the universe and energy itself is also cyclical. So the concept that there's nothing new under the sun really seems to ring true for me because of the fact that I've never been able to observe eternity, right? As you were saying, you know, you can't say this law is eternal or that's eternal or anything of that nature because, hey, nobody who claims that there's such a thing as eternity has lived through eternity, have they? So they can't say it, and we don't know most of the time how things really work or what things might turn into. It's just a world of possibilities, and I think the only people that really accomplish nothing are those who deny possibilities and prevent others from exploring and really trying to develop things. There's two types of people in the world, forward-looking people and backward-looking people. Backward-looking people are just like, it's like driving a car and all you can see is the rearview mirror, you know? They'll never actually make plot a course through life or change this world for the better or anything like that because they're simply riding on past achievements of others, you know, on the shoulders of giants, as it were. It's the forward-looking people who have no idea, you know, balls to the wall, fly-by-the-seat-of-the-pants type of individuals who take massive risks, I think, that actually truly chart a positive course for humanity. You know, people like yourselves.
But there's also the balance of being the person in the middle of that, the people that live in the now. That's when you start experiencing the synergistic type occurrences where you look at the time and it's always the same, or, you know, you think of someone and they instantly appear, and, you know, that's when you're living in the now, that you're not expecting, you're not anticipating, you're not looking back and comparing, but just simply living in the now and realizing that things just happen for a reason. You know, and that's where the magic really starts happening, where we all rediscover those things, that, because we all have, actually, if the universe is a cyclical, if there is this revolution of energy, then we all have lived through it and we all just forgot. Now, to rediscover that, or to rediscover the synergy of it all and how to live in the now, that's where the magic happens. Because, that's where you find the most happiness. It's where the breakthroughs come in.
I think that's where it's also important to connect those two concepts, which are revealed so simply and eloquently by the mathematics, which is that there are two interacting systems, one of which is a spiral and a cycle and a convergence and divergence and you know, disintegration and reintegration. And that is the way of the physical world that we live in. And the other is the way, I believe, of the spiritual world, or the mental world, consciousness world, whatever you want to call it, which is much more like a field, what they talk about as a field in physics. It's non-local. It's spread out over space. It's not, I don't believe, simply confined to the body, which is why you have, you know, four people coming up with calculus in the same years, or all these different people discovering evolution in the same year. Or, you know, these kind of synchronistic occurrences, like Daniel was saying, I think ultimately that linear system, which is what brings novelty and innovation into the world, is in many ways in contradiction with the cyclical, habitual patterns of the world, and yet they are one. And so you can really experience both sides of it. But revolution without evolution, is simply spinning on its heels. You know, it just each new freedom fighter becomes another dictator, and it's all pointless.
Yeah. Well, that's what we need, ladies and gentlemen. We need evolution, not a revolution. We don't want to go in circles and just keep spinning our wheels. We want to change something permanently. Make it better. Make it different. Living the same way and doing the same things for the entire existence of the rest of humanity is fracking pointless, in my opinion. Let's have a point to our existence, shall we? Let's live in the now. Make it happen. Daniel Nunes, Randy Powell, OnStopEnergies.com, RandyStonesMovie.com, and incidentally, LunasLivingKitchen.com. Thank you very much, and we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.